Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Character study is one of the more profitable methods of gleaning the message of God, learning the kind of person we ought to be and ought not to be. Generally, we cite those godly people as those from which we learn. Certainly, those are the ones we are to imitate. But the record of those less godly, even wicked, can teach us. From them, we can learn what traits of character to avoid. The study of Nebuchadnezzar is of considerable historical interest, but he was not a commendable kind of person, although one of history's more notable ones. His career was marked with personal boldness and power. Oh, he was eccentric, and even in times a period of insanity. God has seen fit to show us something, however, of the man in the inspired scripture because of his relationship to the people of God and an important period of history in the unfolding of God's scheme of redemption for man. Nebuchadnezzar was the son of the founder of the great Babylonian Empire. This empire eventually became worldwide under Nebuchadnezzar, and until that time no nation had achieved power on its equal. This man was the head of the Babylonian forces that conquered and destroyed the land of Canaan and the city of Jerusalem, taking its inhabitants into a period of captivity. He was able to defeat another major world power of his day, Egypt. He built a kingdom so rich and prominent that estimates of either his wealth or power are without calculation. Nebuchadnezzar's capture and destruction of Jerusalem was one of the most devastating ever recorded. It was, without doubt, one of the darkest moments in the history of the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Under the guidance of Nebuchadnezzar and under his direction, the city was not only brought to starvation, but eventually plundered and disgraced, humiliated, mercilessly abused, its inhabitants removed, and the city burned. The sacred places in Jerusalem were especially his targets. The learned and valuable people of the land were first removed, leaving only the least and those considered nothing more than rabble, with some of the very implements and tools that the priest of Israel used to worship God. Nebuchadnezzar engaged in the most riotous and blasphemous behavior in order to desecrate that which was holy to Israel. And at the height of his reign, however, he was subjected to strange and astonishing dreams, as recorded in the book of Daniel. One such dream was God's forecast of the coming of his spiritual kingdom, the establishment of the church of Christ, in Daniel the second chapter. Daniel interpreted that dream to depict four kingdoms, Babylon being as the head of gold of an awesome image. Three other kingdoms were to follow, and in the days of the fourth empire, God would establish his kingdom. These kingdoms were Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And in the days of the Roman Empire came the Lord and the beginning of the church, God's kingdom, on the day of Pentecost. But there was another very disturbing and distressing dream he had that was also interpreted by God's prophet Daniel. It had to do with Nebuchadnezzar personally, Daniel chapter 4. It foretold of his overthrow by his enemies, at least temporarily. He was forewarned how he would be treated as a beast of the field and would survive by eating grass. Now, such a thought was humiliation beyond anything this monarch could ever imagine. But a closer look at the character of Nebuchadnezzar, both from the Bible and from secular records, shows he was a public and notorious idolater by making and worshiping and commanding others to worship his idols and his images, Daniel chapter 3. It was his passion for his idols that caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be cast into the fiery furnace when they refused to obey his orders to bow before his gods. His wrath was so inflamed that he caused the furnace to be heated seven times hotter than usual in order to punish these children of Israel. And as we see this man of great worldly power, we also see a man who paid honors to the senseless and powerless images of gods of his own making. Nebuchadnezzar is known in history as a man of relentless cruelty. His victories were accomplished through a reign of terror. Those who fell before him were treated without mercy. This is evident in certain biblical notes, such as the murder of the sons of Zedekiah before his own eyes, and then putting out the eyes of Zedekiah, of which we read in 2 Kings chapter 25. Was this not also evident in casting the three Israelites in the fiery furnace? Was not the siege of Jerusalem evidence of his inhumane treatment of others? Well, such was characteristic of this man's actions. History records that Nebuchadnezzar, somewhat like Alexander the Great that came some centuries after him, had an insatiable desire for power, an inordinate ambition for personal glory. He was never satisfied with what he had conquered, but always wanted more and more. He drove his armies relentlessly until victory upon victory that brought him glory was accomplished. When one considers how much good can be accomplished when people turn such ambitions into noble and righteous directions, we're all made more sorry that Nebuchadnezzar so wasted this talent that could have otherwise been so commendable. And as we learn in Daniel 4 and verse 30, Nebuchadnezzar was an exceptionally proud and haughty man. Of all his gods, he considered himself the greatest god of all. He prided himself for what he had done. He gave no credit to anyone or anything else for his victories. He was void of any comprehension that the true God of heaven was superior to him. He was a person of the big I and the little and insignificant you. But God humbled Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 4, exactly as Daniel had interpreted in his dream. He was also allowed to be subject to others, obviously losing his authority and losing his grip over his own kingdom. He had to live out of doors. He had to eat grass. He was despised by all. His was a loss of friends and prestige and power, the very things that meant so much to him. And in a degraded and humiliated state, he was deprived of human association. But when we consider the kind of man he was, we're inclined to agree that he had earned and yea deserved whatever evil that befell him. But God allowed his humiliation to be temporary until it accomplished God's purposes. These things continued until this once proud monarch was brought to his knees and forced to recognize the true God of heaven. No longer did Nebuchadnezzar claim such glory as he had done, but began to attribute greatness to God. Indications are that this man was sincere and penitent, and had a reformed attitude and action of life. Nebuchadnezzar might well be classed alongside others of the Bible that once walked the way of destruction, but later removed his blinders and saw the light. We can learn at least four significant and applicable lessons from which we know about this man. First, God is the only true and living God. The world is not left untouched by the power and the direction of God. We do not always know how God manages things, but we have His word that He oversees the affairs of men through His providence. Regardless of what takes place in the world, God is not removed from His throne. Even the events surrounding Nebuchadnezzar were used by God to bring His saving plan closer to a reality through Jesus Christ. And secondly, we see the folly of pride and self-glory. In the Bible, we read of several such people whose pride brought about their ruin. Consider Haman in the book of Esther. He wanted to destroy Mordecai, but who was hanged on the very gallows he intended to use to hang Mordecai. Herod in the New Testament fell victim to his pride as he considered himself as a god and was brought to disease and to death. Did not Adam and Eve fall victim to the temptation to be more than they really were, violating God's commands? Was that not an appeal to vainglory? Proverbs 16, verse 18 says, "Pride goeth before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall." And there's a third lesson. We are impressed with the value of divine favor. Friend, we cannot defy God and succeed. What so-called success we think we achieve is but a temporary and fleeting earthly gain that must perish. Real prosperity belongs to those who are rich toward God, Luke 12, verse 21. Even if we gain the whole world but lose the soul, we've made a bad bargain and suffer a great loss. Even if all the world be at our feet and we're not right with God, we're not right. And there's a fourth lesson. From a survey of the life of this man in Nebuchadnezzar, we see the value of humility. For when one humbles himself before God, we see God's loving mercy and blessings extended to him. The humiliation of the proud can be the means of exaltation. It can bring them into an awareness of matters that really matter, that they otherwise may never have given proper consideration. God must have seen in Nebuchadnezzar a potential of qualities that were admirable if only they could be turned into a more productive direction. Everything indicates that Nebuchadnezzar learned some of these lessons quite well with the experiences that came his way and the words of God that he heard from the Lord's great prophet Daniel. And while we cannot go so far as to say that Nebuchadnezzar will be among those in heaven, this we do not know. This would be saying more than the Bible reveals. But we can see a distinctive turn in this man, and this we can commend to all who are out of step with righteousness. How thankful we can be that the same God that dealt with that monarch of old is still God of all. And he even extends his mercy toward me and toward you through his Son, Jesus Christ. How wise we would show ourselves to recognize our need and come to him so that we may be blessed by him. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.